My name is Will, I'm an alcoholic.
Yes, you are!
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Those are my friends. Anyways, it is great to be here. I feel honored to be able to share here. I've been coming to this meeting pretty much every week since I moved here 2 years ago. I got sober in a meeting just like this up in New Hampshire, and I really felt at home at young people's meetings. Anyways, I was born in Connecticut.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Connecticut was not my kind of place. I actually always would dream about being in the city. I come from a little bit of money, and I always felt that pressure by my parents to be as successful as my father was. I don't know if that was even there, but in my mind, it was, and it was real. I remember from a really young age, having these outrageously high expectations for myself, which I could never meet. And it depressed me really fast. I remember being like 4 years old and just feeling like a total piece of shit and wanting to die. And I knew that wasn't normal at four. My crazy mind just thought like, oh, I'm, meant for bigger, better things, I had the biggest God complex, and it always stuck with me. But, I have this God complex, but I feel like a total piece of shit at the same time. And I know that's a lot of our nature, these dual feelings of like, we have huge egos, but we also feel like we're the biggest pieces of shit. School didn't help my depression. It actually made it way worse because I am inherently lazy and never wanted to do homework. I remember I was in first grade. We got spelling words. We had to memorize them. And I remember my mom used to sit me down and make me write out all the words and prepare me for my spelling test on Fridays, and I would just throw these huge fits because I didn't want to spell the word I. But, it was serious, I wanted to escape. I wanted to play my N64 24/7, That idea of wanting to get out of myself has always been there since birth. And I believe that is, because I was born with this disease. I was born with that giant gaping hole inside of myself. And from early on, I was just trying to fill it with anything. For me, early on, it was video games. I would, on the weekends, I would sit home for like 16 hours and just fucking play like Banjo-Kazooie or whatever. And yeah, it was, sorry, I just lost myself. So eventually that led to experimenting with alcohol. I was about 10, and I have an older sister, she was 15, and she started to drink around that time. And I would hear her talking about it with her friends, like, they'd be going out to parties and talk about, their one friend bringing some beers or a fucking little thing of Georgie or whatever, and they'd be sharing it. And I immediately was like, I want that, So what do? I start going into my parents' liquor cabinet and, taking sips of their alcohol, always by myself. For the first many times I drank, it was by myself, and that's how I liked it, I was very antisocial. I had no friends because I was such a miserable asshole. And so I a weekend for me, no one would be home. It would be just me, and I would go into my parents' liquor cabinet and drink. Like, they had a huge, one of those gallon bottles of Grey Goose. And I would start drinking it, And at first it was just, you know, a sip, but then it like slowly but surely started to become more and more until, you know, 13 years old, getting drunk by yourself. That started kind of infecting into the week, and stopped going to school. I would get calls home frequently from school saying, you know, I missed this class, or I didn't show up, or I tried to leave in the middle of the day. So my parents decided to send me away to boarding school. That was their solution. We can't deal with him. Or this is what I thought at the time. We can't deal with him, so we're just going to send him away. Pawn him off on someone else. So freshman year, I got sent to an all-guys boarding school. And for me, that was like a death sentence, you know. But like, at that point, I barely even talked to girls, you know. I was so shy. But I was like, no, not an all-guys boarding school. That's awful. Because I'm just so fucking delusional. And, I'd figured out how I could make the best of it, and that was getting really drunk with one or two other kids. We would do that all the time. And then, it's when I discovered weed. And up until then, it was like the weekends, you know, I was like the weekend warrior. Like, we would go do class and, you know, throughout the week, but then on the weekends, we were just sit back in our dorm room and get drunk. And once we got into the picture, I loved it. Fell in love. It was like, especially when I mixed them, it was like that weight, that's where I felt that weight come. That, you know, people talk about being able to breathe. And that's where I found it. So once that came into the picture, that's when everything really started to go downhill. I kept saying to myself, I'll just do it on weekends and just do it on weekends. And I was able to do that, right, for a little bit. But I found in between, like, using, that's all I thought about was just getting fucked up, you know. And that was how, like, I passed the time. Was just, if I wasn't doing it, I was thinking about it. And I was thinking about it all the time. Soon, I couldn't wait till the weekends anymore. And we had, in boarding school, we had a half day on Wednesdays. So we would go into town, and that's when we would get some alcohol, and we would light up down there. And that was this slow progression. It was just like, add an extra day in the week, you know, another day, you know. So on Tuesdays, I would start smoking again. And then it would be like, Monday at noon, I would have a gap in my class, so I would go and drink a couple beers and light up. And I didn't see that wasn't really normal, you know. I thought, I was like, oh, it's whatever, it's free time, you know. I don't live in the normal world. I'm here in boarding school. Like, it's this own little land that, like, rules don't exist of, like, common human decency, you know. So that stopped really fast. I got caught one day, and they put me on drug tests, and I was getting the alcohol swabs too. So I, you know, that was the first time where I was like, all right, I'm done with this, you know. I don't want to mess up my life anymore. I was almost kicked out of high school at that point. And I had 1 week of just, I can do this. I won't drink anymore. I won't smoke anymore. And yeah, that lasted 1 week. The pain got so unbelievable for me that I had to do something. So I had a friend who was also on drug tests, and he was smoking spice. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's like that fake weed stuff, K2, they call it. And so I was like, well, I can do that now, because it doesn't show up on drug tests. That's why I was doing it, and I started doing that, and I hated it. I'm just throwing this out there. I hated it so much, but I couldn't not do it, because I couldn't deal with what I've become, you know. I was an empty shell of a person. And this shit's really bad for you if you don't know. Like, I had a stroke, actually, because I did it so much. And... But I didn't care. I didn't fucking care. I wanted to get out of this world. Slowly after that, the place that sold the K2 that we would get it from, it was some sketchy gas station. They couldn't get it anymore, but they had bath salts. You know, this was back when the whole face eating shit was happening, and I saw that on TV. I was like, "That's awesome! That sounds great!" So I started doing bath salts. But the problem with that is it doesn't last very long. So I was doing it like 15, 20 times a day. And I actually went into this, like a drug-induced psychosis. I tried burning down my dormitory because my parents told me to go to my SAT prep class. So I said, no, fuck you guys, I'm not doing that. And I filmed myself tearing up the book, putting it in the corner of my room, and setting it on fire. Right? Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous. But for me, that was, like, totally normal. I was like, yeah, I'm going to show them. I'm going to burn this place down. It's going to be fucking awesome. And, of course, you know, the teacher that lived in my dorm, he smelt it. He came running in. He was like, what the fuck are you doing? And so I don't know what the hell happened, but I should have gotten kicked out right then and there. But they were like, okay, if you go see this shrink, you can stay here. And I was like, well, screw it. I don't want to go home, so I guess I'll just go see this shrink. So, yeah, I went to the shrink, and I was kind of letting him know, like, yeah, I, like, really like getting high, I really like getting drunk. And he was like, well, how much do you like it? I was like, well, I hate everything else in this world except those two things. And he sat back and was like, huh, that's interesting. And later on a little bit, I was, you know, trying to minimize that. But he tells me, he's like, I think you have a problem. And I know you're doing something. He didn't know what I was on, but, like, I would come into these therapy sessions, like, jittery. And then I let him know. I was like, yeah, you know, I've been going to this gas station, and they have these things called bath salts, and it's kind of like PCP and meth and really trippy. And he was like, what the fuck? And he, sure enough, he did some research, and I was really proud about that. You know, I like wore it on my sleeve that I was doing these crazy, awful research chemicals, you know, that like were killing people. Like, this was at the same time where someone in Miami was like eating someone's face from this. And yeah, I was just fucking proud. I thought I was cool. I thought I was hardcore, you know? And sure enough, I told him, and he goes and tells my parents, who tells the deans, and they kick me out of school. I didn't know I got kicked out of school. I just thought I was going home for like a mental health vacation, you know? I thought I was gonna go fucking I was so fucking delusional. But so yeah, I got kicked out of school. I had this 1 week where I was home. I thought I was just gonna be home for a week and then go back to school. And so I was drunk 20, like, the entire week was pretty much a blackout. And this was 4 years ago on 420, actually, when this happened. So yeah, it was 420. At that point, you know, like, in my head, I would get all excited, like, oh, it's 420, but, like, I couldn't do more drugs than I already was doing. So it was, like, a normal day for me. And, like, all my friends were calling me up, like, yeah, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And I was like, oh, I did that yesterday. So it was... Actually, it was right before 4:20 in the morning. I'm sitting up. I'm totally belligerent. I'm coming to, though, right? And I hear these footsteps coming down my hall. And I'm thinking it's my parents coming to yell at me for, you know, doing drugs in their house. But no, it was these two giant Russian men. who come into, they burst into my room. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? And I start screaming for my mom. And they're like, your parents sent us to come get you. You're going to Utah. And so, yeah, I'm like fighting. They handcuff me. They throw me in the back of a truck. And like, it was some like, it felt like I was being kidnapped. And like what they would do if they like found a Russian spy or something. Like, I had no idea what was happening. So I'm freaking the fuck out. So, but they finally get me calm, and they tell me as we're driving, like, yeah, you're being sent to a wilderness therapy program. And they told me it was only going to be 3 weeks. It was most of it was going to be in a cabin, and you're going to maybe hike once a week. So they put me on a plane to Utah. I'm like, all right, I can do 3 weeks, and then I'll go back to getting fucked up. That's fine. I probably need this. Some time in the great outdoors. It's going to be great. I get there. They give me a 75-pound pack full of food and all of that. I'm like, what the hell is this for? So they drive me out into the middle of the desert in Utah. And they pull over it is in the middle of like an oil field. And I see these like kids come out. They're all really dirty, and like they all have really big beards. They look like hobos, and I'm like, oh, this is not what they told me. And so I was assigned this like other kid who was like there for, he was there for like, I don't know, 6 weeks maybe, and he was like my mentor. And the first thing he tells me, a plane was going over my head. He goes, you know how far away that plane is? I go, how far? He goes, 8 to 12 weeks away. Welcome to wilderness. And that was when I figured out how long I was going to be there for. And he broke it down to me. He was like, yes, you can possibly leave after 6 weeks, but no one does. And there's one kid in my group who was there for like 25 weeks, which was like a record for the program. His parents, like, he was so fucked up that like his parents were like, we can't deal with you. You're going to stay here until you're 18. And so, like, I'm in, like, total shock right now. I'm like, what the hell? So they tell me that I was going to be there for a long time, and then they told me, well, you're not going to go home after that because there's this thing called aftercare, which is where they send you after here, and you're probably going to be gone for 15 months to a year. I was like, shit, I have to do something about this. That was my immediate thing was, how can I get out of this? I couldn't accept the fact that my own shit brought me here. So I was there for 12 weeks, and it was probably the 12 hardest weeks of my life. Then they sent me to New Hampshire to a place called Shortridge Academy, and it was a therapeutic boarding school, and I fought that so hard. I couldn't accept the fact, like I said before, that my own actions brought me there. I was pissed off at my parents for sending me away. I was pissed off at the staff for opening the place. So yeah, I was an angry asshole. But one day I was probably there like 2 weeks, and this like typical juice head, like Guido staff that was there, he comes up to me and says, why are you here? And I'm like, oh, I did a lot of drugs. He says, okay, Sunday I'm going to an NA meeting with a bunch of the kids here. You're coming. I was like, what the hell is NA? And he goes, Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm like, oh, I don't need that shit. And he goes, all right, that's fine. We get coffee. There'll be girls there. You can look at them. And I was like, oh, all right, coffee and girls, that's cool. So we go to this meeting. It wasn't an NA meeting. He told me it was NA just because, in his experience, kids who didn't really have alcohol problems weren't going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So it turned out to be a meeting in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, called Portsmouth Young People's. And I walk in there, and it was just like this. Kids my age who were sober. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I don't know why I kept going. Can't tell you why. I really think it was because it was the coffee, you know. There was no coffee at my school. And, I mean, I like coffee then. So I kept going. But I knew if they were going to keep me going that I had to, like, play the part, you know. So I got a sponsor and a big book. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be sober. But in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm not going to be sober. Until it was Christmas. And I managed to manipulate my counselor to get me on a home visit. And the second I got on the train to get back home, I was like, all right, I have drugs here. I had a bottle of absinthe that I bought in Rome. And I was like, that is mine this week. So the first thing I do when I get home is crack that bottle. And I drink it. And I was like, this is all right. I missed it. But I'm not gonna let it run my life like it did. A week later, that bottle was gone. Half of my parents' liquor cabinet was gone. I was in the city at a Bad Fish concert. I don't remember how I got there, especially because I was in Connecticut. So I don't know how I got into the city. I was with this kid that graduated the program. He was like, oh, we're going to go to the show and, you know, do some shit. I was like, cool. So I somehow get in possession a bag of cocaine that I was going to sneak back into school. And I ended up doing that entire bag. It was a big bag of coke. I ended up doing that entire bag in like 2 hours. And I was on the train back to school, like, jittery, and like I couldn't process any thoughts, and like all I knew was just like, oh, how the fuck did this happen? So that's when I learned, you know, I can't do this normally, because I really just wanted to have a couple sips of absinthe, you know, because, you know, it was cool for me, you know. It's like, oh, it's illegal in America, but I learned that I couldn't do that. So by a miracle, I pull up into the train station and I get picked up by this staff that was taking me to these meetings. And he was like, all right, we're going to this convention. It was in Springfield, Mass. It's called the Young People Sober Convention, right? And I was like, what the hell is that? That sounds awesome. And he was like, yeah, it's just like big 3-day party in a hotel with a lot of Red Bull and girls, and there's a dance, and I was like, all right, I need it. And so he brought me and three friends to NECIPA, which is the New England Conference of Young People. And I was there, and like I just heard the solution for the first time. I had 3 days, right? Totally. My mind was so just, it was still in a total fog, but like I remember being at they're like keynote speakers every day, and I was at the Friday main meeting, and I don't remember what the guy said, but I broke down. I fucking cried in my buddy's arms. I was like, I can't do this anymore. So 2 weeks later, no, sorry. A month later, I went to NISCIPA, right, which was the New Hampshire conference, right? And my first year, I just would bounce around from conference to conference to conference. I fell in love with these conventions, and that was all I knew that could keep me sober, right? Because I had fun. And sure enough, like, that was what worked for me, you know? I found the thing that I was willing to stay sober for. And all the rest fell into place, you know. I got a sponsor who I met at a convention, started doing the steps, and that's where I grew up, you know. I know a lot of people know me, like, that's like my thing. I go to all these conventions, and like, I've done that for, you know, 3 years now. And it's been fucking awesome, you know. And it's not just like conventions, you know. I learned that's where I learned how to have fun, because I need to have fun here, you know? And, yeah, like, I learned how to do service, because when I first came in here, like, I was like, what the fuck? I don't want to help people. Like, I want to help myself. But then my sponsor was like, no, that's what this is about. That's why I'm here right now, is because I want to, you know, one person, if I can just reach one person who can identify with me, you know, that one day counter, or it doesn't even need to be a day counter, just anyone, you know, that's why I'm here. I'm not here for myself anymore. I'm here to give back. And I think I'm about out of time. I rambled a lot. I'm sorry. Really nervous. But I love all of you so much. Like, this is, like, a beautiful room, and, like, everyone here is so fucking awesome. And, like, all of you just inspire me, you know, because we're not using, we're not miserable. Like, we are happy, joyous, and free. And I wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for you guys, because I had nothing when I came in here. So thanks.